But now we're ready for Chodesh Shvat. We had Rosh Chodesh Shvat last Shabbos, and now it's time to move on to the next month of the year, next experience. Shvat, as we know, we're heading towards the spring. We're not quite there yet. It's not Adar, it's not Nisan, it's still cold outside, it's still dark outside. Shvat is still a month associated with Ra. We said that Teves is a month associated with Esav. Shvat is as well. The way it actually works out on the calendar is that Tammuz and Av correspond with Teves and Shvat. So the same way that Tammuz and Av, we know, are tragic months, so too we look at Teves and Shvat also as bad months, you know, theoretically on the Jewish calendar. To go back to what we were explaining before, you know, we're still in a period where nights are longer than days, it's dark outside, it's cold outside, we're still there. We haven't quite reached the light yet, but there is a glimmer of hope in Shvat. Because just like in Av, we know Av begins with Tisha B'Av, 9 days in Tisha B'Av, which is tragic. But when Tu B'Av comes, 15th of Av is Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av is a Yontif. The Gemara says that Tu B'Av is one of the most joyous days on the calendar. To figure out why that is, when we get to we'll talk about Av again in a few months, we'll talk about Av and figure that one out. But Tu B'Av is a very joyous day. And after Tu B'Av, there's transformation. And Av becomes a much more joyous time, heading towards Elul, Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, Sukkot. As it heads towards a very positive season. And technically look at Tu B'Av, if you do your math, if we're sitting Shiva beginning on Tisha B'Av, you get up on Tu B'Av. The Shiva's over, and now it's time to move on with life. That's Tu B'Av is. So too in Shvat, Tu B'Shvat becomes a transformational time. Tu B'Shvat is the Yantif of Shvat, and Tu B'Shvat's a day where we're supposed to start looking forward towards the spring, towards the lighter, warmer, happier times. That's Tu B'Shvat. Essentially, Tu B'Shvat is 1 month from Purim, 2 months from Pesach, so we're really almost there. We've almost made it out of the cold winter. I was thinking about Pesach cleaning, right? But it's close. We're almost there. We're looking at it in a positive way. We're getting ready for growth and development of Klal Yisrael. So that's Shvat. It's time of rejuvenation. It's a time where nature is starting to wake up a little bit. We'll discuss. That's the month of Shvat. So let's understand more about Shvat. What does Shvat really stand for? What is it supposed to be the emotion of a Jew in Shvat? What's supposed to be the vote of a Jew in Shvat? And the truth is, like we said, it's still cold outside. You know, in a way, Shvat is usually, and this is Silver Spring, we have the coldest parts of the year in Shvat. In February, March, we have a lot of snow, snow this morning, a very, very cold part of the year. The equinox isn't until usually on March 20th or so, and that's when we start having longer days again. But we're still in the time of shorter nights, of longer nights and shorter days. And we're not quite in Adar Nisan. But Shvat represents a reawakening. It's a time where there's hope and anticipation for the blossoming of spring to occur once again. That's what Shvat represents. So the big day of Shvat, many will say it's the Super Bowl actually, but we didn't say it's Tu B'Shvat. But for many out there, it's Super Bowl, that's for sure. The big day of Shvat is Tu B'Shvat. And I want to examine a little bit about Tu B'Shvat. Both this week and next week, we'll talk about Tu B'Shvat and understand how that really indicates what Shvat's all about. And technically, Tu B'Shvat is a very technical day. Tu B'Shvat in Halacha has ramifications, you know, that involve very, very subtle details of Halacha. Just to go through a second, what Tu B'Shvat really means halachically, the Mishnah says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, there's 4 Rosh Hashanahs in the year. We're all aware of Rosh Hashanah, the one we call Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, but it says there's Rosh Hashanah li'ilanos, there's a Rosh Hashanah for trees, which is actually Machlokis. Beis Shammai says it's Rosh Chodesh Shvat, Beis Hillel says it's Tu B'Shvat. So we just follow Beis Hillel when it comes to Halacha. So if we say Tu B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah for trees. Now what does that mean exactly? And it's not just a cute phrase, what does it mean? So what it means is that, a few things. When it comes to calculating the year where a fruit associates with. So we say it goes Basar Chanata, which means you look at when the fruit blossomed. If the fruit blossoms before Tu B'Shvat, it's the previous year's fruit. If fruit blossoms after Tu B'Shvat, it's next year's fruit. Why does it matter when the fruit blossomed? Well, it matters, number one, there's certain years in Eretz Yisrael, they would give Maaser Sheni, and some years they give Maaser Ani. If you look at the Shemitah cycle, years 1, 2, 4, and 5, they would have to give Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni was brought to Yerushalayim to be eaten. Years 3 and 6, they'd give Maaser Ani instead of Maaser Sheni, which they'd give it to the poor. So how do you know, is this fruit a Maaser Sheni fruit or Maaser Ani fruit? Which one is it obligated to be separated for? Well, it depends. Did it blossom before or after Tu B'Shvat? That's a very important thing to know. It's also relevant to the Lach of Orla. We know that the first 3 years of a fruit tree, you can't eat it. The fruits are orla. They're usher to have any hanaf from. You can't benefit. You can't eat. You can't do anything. That applies even to chutz la'aretz, by the way. So if you plant a fruit tree out in your yard here in Silver Spring, orla does apply. How do you know when you're allowed to eat it? Well, if 3 years pass, you still can't eat that fruit until Tu B'Shvat passes as well. So if I were to plant a fruit tree in, let's say, the month of Tammuz. So I wait for three Tammuzes to pass, and really I wait for three Rosh Hashanahs to pass, and then I can't eat the fruit until the next Tu B'Shvat passes. Once that occurs, I can eat the fruit. So Tu B'Shvat, it's the end of like kind of like an accounting period. You know, it's a very technical day, as it were. It's relevant to us, yeah.
Okay, well, because we cannot eat before the date, or we need to eat when it will blossom. We need to wait until it will be ready.
It has to be blossomed after Tu B'Shvat, right? Yeah. After 3 years have passed, the Tu B'Shvat comes, right? Yeah. Right. It's a good question. Right. Right. So you count the year, no, from when it's planted. That's when it's planted. No, just the planting. Which happens, usually trees don't give much fruit for 3 years anyway, so it doesn't really have, you know, practically, it's not really an issue typically. But, yeah, but you have to wait for three Rosh Hashanahs to pass, and then Tu B'Shvat. That's how you calculate it. So that's the extent of the day. Like, if you want to know the sum total of the day in Halacha, that's all it means. Very technical details, more or less. But yet we call it a day of Simcha. We don't say Tachan on Tu B'Shvat, which means it's considered a day of joy. That's what it means. So what's the joy of Tu B'Shvat exactly? I mean, it's like the end of, let's say, a fiscal accounting period or something. Like, that these fruits go with last year, these fruits go with next year. But why is that a joyous day? What's supposed to be the feeling of joy we achieve on Tu B'Shvat? That's the real question. So first we have to explore, why is the Rosh Hashanah for trees Tu B'Shvat? Like, why that day on the calendar? Of all days, why was that day chosen? So Gemara asked that question, and the Gemara says an interesting thing. The Gemara says, even though Rov Tekufa Adayim V'chutz, even though most of winter is still to come, so we're not quite anywhere near the end of winter, winter is still a long way away to finish, but Rov Gishmei Hashanah, the Gemara says most of the year's rain has already fallen. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, the rainy season is very limited, and the rain comes only in the winter, after Sukkot time, through Pesach time, basically, and most of it falls in the early part of the winter. Eretz Yisrael is always our model when it comes to understanding the months and the seasons in Eretz Yisrael. So Gemara says that in Eretz Yisrael, by this point, in a good year, we hope, you know, most of the rain has already fallen, and the ground already has, you know, sufficient moisture for the rest of the year. And even though there's plenty of winter to come, now we can start looking towards the new year for the trees. That's the Gemara says. So Rashi explains that what happens on Tu B'Shvat. At Tu B'Shvat time, the sap starts rising up through the trunk of the tree to the branches, and the process of the coming year's blossoms has begun. That's what Rashi tells us. So Tu B'Shvat's a time where, since most of the rain has fallen in Eretz Yisrael, at that point, next year's fruits begin their process. We don't see anything yet. The trees are still bare and brown, there's no leaves and no flowers yet on the trees, but the process has begun. That's Tu B'Shvat. That's how Rashi explains it in the Gemara. And again, looking at Eretz Yisrael, you know, when it comes to Chutz La'aretz, things are always different depending on where you are in the world, and seasons, and hemispheres, etc. We mean Eretz Yisrael. And as a side point, but an important point, you know, we view Eretz Yisrael really as the source of all bracha for the world. All the ashba of Hashem, Hashem's bracha to this world, which makes things happen and grow and succeed, comes by means of Eretz Yisrael. So the fruits of Eretz Yisrael growing is a symbol for the entire world's fruits growing. And when we bench, we say, the benching is based on the pasuk in the Torah, V'chalta v'sivata v'rachta, Hashem okech aratz tova asher nasamach. You should bless Hashem on the aratz tova, on the good land that Hashem gave to you. Well, my dinner tonight did not come from Eretz Yisrael. My dinner tonight came probably from somewhere in America, I guess. I don't know, the bread, the Great Plains. I don't know where they grew the wheat. It wasn't Eretz Yisrael. But still, when we bench, we recognize Eretz Yisrael, because really, all the world's bracha comes to us through Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is like the pipeline for all the world's bracha. So when you look at the fruit process, the growing of agriculture, the farming process, you're always seeing Eretz Yisrael as the key. Everything else kind of stemming from that. So in Eretz Yisrael, we say most of the rain has fallen and the trees are starting to develop their fruits for the new year. So it's a sign for us that the new year is emerging everywhere. That's what that means. So that's why Tu B'Shvat is chosen to be Rosh Hashanah Lilanus. Now, if we look It's very fascinating, because the Gemara told us that most of the winter is still to come. We're not quite at spring. There's still a lot of winter ahead of us. There's still a long, cold stretch with possible snow and blizzards and ice and everything else until the next year occurs, until the blossoms start growing. But yet, we're celebrating the new year of the trees. And it's funny, because we don't see anything happening outside. The trees look just as dead as they did yesterday. You know, nothing seems to have changed. We know, we've talked about before, in Jewish thought, spring is a symbol of salvation. Nisan is the month of our Geula. Nisan is the month where we became a people. In Shir HaShirim, there's a pasuk and describing the spring as time of salvation. The Kinea Stav Avar, the winter has passed. Tageshem Cholof Helchol, the rain has finished. Hanitzani Nir Ba'aretz, the flowers appear on the earth. Esa Zamir Higia, the time for singing has come. The Kol HaTorah Nishmar B'Yartzeinu, the voice of the dove is heard in the land, the chirping of the birds. And Chazal take this pasuk to be a symbol of Mashiach. We say Kol HaTorah is the sound of Mashiach, and the spring, the blossoming, is all a sign of the world's Yeshua, the world's salvation, the Ischachus, the renewal of the entire world. So we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to the spring and that renewal. But we're not there yet, and we're still celebrating the tree's new year. It's a very funny thing. So the question is still, how do we understand this? How do we take joy in the new year of the trees when I look outside and I see absolutely nothing there? So we say, yay, deep down in the trunk there's something happening, but if I don't see it, I don't experience it, I'm still freezing cold outside, you know, what am I supposed to celebrate exactly? So we know, as we constantly stress, you know, we live in the year. You know, in the cold, dark days of the winter, the trees are dormant, and you know, we have the risk of being dormant. You know, we mentioned many times, when the flowers blossom, we blossom. When Sukkot comes, we run the risk of getting a little bit too cold because the winter's coming, so we take our lulav, which is the gematria of Chayim, which is alive. We take our esrog, which stays in the tree throughout the year because esrog always stays alive, and we try to grab inspiration for the rest of the year. You know, we know in Hanukkah we spoke about how Hanukkah we're grabbing at those sparks of warmth and fire from the candles because, again, we're in the middle of the cold, dark winter. And as it gets colder, you know, we want to make sure that we always ignite ourselves, ignite that fire. So we're grasping at the light, we're grasping at the energy and the chiyas during the cold, dark days to try to make it through and to be vibrant. So now what happens? Now Tu B'Shvat arrives. And a new cycle starts to awaken. Nature, it's aroused. Nature wakes up from its slumber. The nature has been sleeping, it's been dormant, it's been doing nothing for all this time. And we see nothing. We don't see the blossoms, we don't see the fruits. But there's something happening, something underway. And we're waiting for this. We're waiting through the winter for something in order to blossom. We want to get out of it. We don't like the cold. We want to get out of the cold. And we're trying to grasp at the sparks of inspiration. Again, that's what Hanukkah was for. That's what these months are for, to try to find those sparks to keep us going. And now in reality, there's something there to sense. The trees are starting to wake up. There's something there to sense. Like we said, Purim is a month away. Pesach is a month away. There's something there. There's something coming. But what do we see? We still see nothing. We see bare trees. We see frost. There's no leaves. There's no flowers. There's no fruits. So we're still trying to figure out, what am I supposed to see in the tree? So I'm going to share with you a beautiful essay from Rav Hirsch. Shushal Frau Hirsch. Rav Hirsch has writings on all of the yomtifs and all the months. It's his collected writings. The collected writings of Rav Hirsch is like 10 volumes. He has all sorts of stuff in there. Beautiful writing. Rav Hirsch originally wrote it in German. So anything you find to be a translation, either the Hebrew or the English, but they're all translations from Rav Hirsch. When it comes to Rav Hirsch, I actually usually try to find English translations because the Hebrew usually is very poetic and difficult. The English is also poetic and difficult, but at least it's easier for me in the Hebrew. But this is Rav Hirsch's collective writings. This is the English translation of the German. And he calls this piece, it's a piece, Shvat number 2, is what he calls it. And the title is A Spring Sermon in the Winter. And he sees that the nature in the month of Shvat, to us, is a sermon about the spring that we have in the midst of the winter. That's what he calls it. It's a gorgeous essay. Everyone can read it in full. I'm not going to read the whole thing right now. It's available in his collected writings. So let's start off with understanding a very important mashal, which I want to develop more, I think, next week in Mirtzah Hashem. But we know Klai Yisrael is compared to a tree. And many times throughout Tanakh, you find Klai Yisrael compared to a tree. I'll just read, you know, one powerful parak of Tehillim with you. But we find it in Az Yashir, we dive in, Tevye'emo v'sita emo. Hashem should bring us v'sita emo and plant us. V'sita emo is the term used to plant a tree. We should be planted like trees in Eretz Yisrael. The simple model of a tree is that you have strong roots in the ground. And once you're rooted, the tree can grow up very strong and can produce so much. and it doesn't require much work anymore. Once you have a strong tree rooted in the ground, and it grows a few solid years, that tree really is pretty independent, and it's going to produce a lot of delicious fruits for us to eat. It says in Tehillim, Perek Pei. Let's read a few psukim over here in Perek Pei in Tehillim. It says, Gethem Mitzrayim Tasiya. Hashem lifted out a grapevine, that's Klal Yisrael, it's also, grapevine is considered a tree, and from Mitzrayim, Tegaresh Goyim Atita'ah. Hashem drove away the nations from Eretz Yisrael, and he planted us there. Pinisa Lepaneha, V'tashra Shorsheh V'tama Oret. Hashem cleared out the land, our roots took root, and we filled the land. Kasu Harim Sila, the mountains gave us their shade, Manafea Arze, the shade of the plant, excuse me, covered the mountains, Manafea Arze El, and its branches became like mighty branches of a cedar tree. Tishalach Ketzireha Ad Yam, the harvest from the trees spread all the way through the ocean, V'Nar Yom Kosea, and all of that, took from the tree spread to the river. Lama Pratzta Gedereh. So the question now is, why did we have to, why did we burst through the fences? Verukla Verderuk, and all of the passersby cursed us. Karsimena Chazer Miyar, the wild hogs eat away at us. The Ziz Sada Yerena, and they graze upon the sticks from our field. El Kimish Tzavakos Shuvna Habit Mishamayim Rei. Hashem, you should come back and see us from Shemayim. Fakod Geffen Zos, and you should take note of this grapevine. Bekana Shonetan Yiminecha, and the branches which your right hand planted. Ve'al Bein Imatzdalach, Srufa Be'esh Kesucha, Migars Panecha Yovedu, etc. You know, we're now burnt up in fire. But the entire kapitel here is comparing us to a grapevine, showing how in our heyday, we were like a grapevine planted in Eretz Yisrael. We were firm, we were fruitful. That's what Klal Yisrael was. We had beautiful periods of greatness, Klal Yisrael. And that was like that tree planted firmly in the land and flourishing. We know the famous pasuk you find throughout Tanakh, when Klal Yisrael is succeeding, the description is always as described, Ish tachas gafu ish tachas te'eno. Everyone sat under their grapevine, under their fig tree. And that was considered like the luxury, the life of luxury that we had. We laid our roots, we gave fruits, and we grew. That was Klal Yisrael. But then, that was like that was the spring and summer of Klal Yisrael historically. Then came our winter. You know, the winter of Golus, and the leaves fell off, the fruit was consumed by others, like we described over here, you know, the walls were breached. Then came the enemies, and they cursed us, and they took all our fruits, and all the pigs grazed upon us, as it says in Tehillim. And Klal Yisrael had also a winter of history. You know, Klal Yisrael's winter of history was in all their leaves, all their fruits fell off, and everything was bare. The branches were broken. So to read just a quote from Rav Hirsch here, this essay, he says, a powerful lesson emerges from this truth, from the announcement of spring from the lips of the trees, still covered by the snow-white shroud of winter. Men are bent by sorrow, bent by pain and grief. They had harbored beautiful dreams of their future, proudly wearing the crown of their efforts, intoxicated with the unlimited power of their might and deeds. But a violent force robbed them of their fruits, and the storms of life smashed their flourishing hope and joy, destroyed the glitter of their society, broke the halo of their power and might, and left them poor and defenseless. The storms of life still shake their resistance and rob them of their fleeting accumulation of wealth, riches, and precious metals. The crown of their pride was broken, and they are left naked and poor. Not a single blossom is within sight. No greenery heralds the coming of a new future. They fail to look within themselves to realize the source from which all help emanates and where hope, strength, and life blossom. So Klal Yisrael, in their difficult times, are like this tree, that there's no blossoms in sight, there's no greenery heralding the coming of a new future. We look robbed of all our fruits, as he says. That's what Klal Yisrael goes through tough times, that same mushroom. But Tu B'Shvat to us is a tremendous lesson of hope. Amazing lesson of hope. Why? Because the foundation, the fundamental point of the tree, the foundation of the tree is its roots. And we know as long as the tree has strong roots, then despite the fact in the winter everything is bare and lost, that tree will come back next spring with new blossoms and new leaves and new fruits. We know that. As long as those roots remain healthy, the tree will blossom and it'll bear fruit again. This is a pasuk in Iyov. It says in Eov Perek Yadalit, it says, Ki yeshel eitz tikva. A tree has hope. Im yichras v'od yachlit, if you cut the tree, it'll sprout again. V'yinikaso lo sechdal, and its nourishment from the soil will never cease. But if the roots age in the ground, then the rest will die in the dust, etc. But that's a very important pasuk. Yeshel eitz tikva. Trees always have hope. It's a very important pasuk to think of. Trees always have hope. So what's our hope? As long as we have our roots laid firmly in the ground, even during very difficult times of Jewish history, we know that we're going to blossom. Rav Hirsch writes, on Tu B'Shvat, on the birthday of spring, in the midst of the winter, leave your homes, shaken by winter storms and tempests. Behold the trees on the day of their birthday, and recall the beauty and harmony of their appearance. Decorated with fruits and crowns of leaves, branches and twigs, winter robbed them of their fruit and colorful leaves. The storms and cold broke branch after branch, twig after twig, leaving the trees covered with shrouds of ice and snow. Yet, lashed by the storms and fury of the season, they celebrate today their silent inner rebirth in defiance of nature's onslaughts. What did the trees lose? What were they deprived? The fruits of which they were robbed would eventually fall off anyways. The leaves which they lost had already withered. The twigs and branches broken by the storms were already dry, brittle, and lifeless. But their inner core remained alive and fresh. And that's really the point. The inner core of the tree is there alive and fresh. They will always weather the storm, as our people will survive the nocturnal terrors of our historic night. We go through terrors as well. But as long as we have those roots, the inner core remains alive and fresh, what happens on the outside is really not all that significant. Because the strength was located not in the transient part of the trees, the rustling crown or dormant of the branches, twigs, and leaves. Their foundation was in a place where weather and storms do not reach. The storms, the weather, the difficult times can't reach our core. They can reach the outside. They can never hit our roots. They can never hit who we really are. So our job as Jews is to make sure that our roots are intact. If we dig down deep and we have very, very powerful roots in what we believe in our Emunah, the Torah, and Klal Yisrael, so then no matter what happens on the outside, we will eventually resprout and blossom and we'll be strong and we'll be vibrant once again. And even at the outside, you know, you don't see anything. It looks dry and bare and nothing's happening on the outside. But inside, there's a guarantee. As long as that tree remains rooted in the ground very, very firmly, then when the spring comes again, we'll again display our blossoms. Again, that's another quote over here from Rav Hirsch. He says, "And now, Aniya Suara Lunechama, the poor, storm-battered, unconsolable daughter of Zion, those for whom communal problems overshadow individual sorrow, those who witness anxiously the steadily diminishing ranks of the faithful, note the increasing number of defectors and the weakened generation." And Rav Hirsch is writing at a time where reform was becoming very, very powerful. And Rav Hirsch spent a lot of his life fighting against the reform movement. And he saw people leaving the ranks. That's what he saw. But he said, "We're in a tough time. The storms hurl them against the trees planted by God, against the vine which Hashem took out from Egypt," like we just read in Tehillim. "They quietly meet Tu B'Shvat. And in the frost of the winter, under the threat of inclement weather and storms, they celebrate the birthday of the spring. Because the storm doesn't damage fresh, green, strong, young twigs. Those that break in the storm have already weakened long ago. The falls in the storm has already been severed from the inner part of the stem. It's no longer belong to the stem, root, or core. The branch is strongly attached to the stem, drawing nourishment from the roots and its fibers. It only survives if it remains faithfully and strongly attached to the old stem, the old core, and the old roots." So he's talking about if those Jews remain traditional and remain loyal to their old roots, to our Masorah, to Halacha, to Torah, those Jews remain strong despite all of the chaos happening around them. That's his point. But at our point, we can make a very, very, there's a very inspirational point about a tree. Because as long as those roots are there, we're guaranteed to produce. And seasons change in life. You know, Tu B'Shvat is a tremendous day of hope and lesson for all of us. For Klal Yisrael as a whole, and for individuals, you know, on their own level. The Klal Yisrael as a whole has gone through a lot. Again, we had our times of history where we were so strong and so powerful, we were blossoming and blooming, everything was great. But then, that's all gone. Everything is stripped away. Like we said in Tehillim, you know, that Geffen is taken away. So now what? Now what do we look towards now? And the answer is Klal Yisrael as a whole is a tree. Because we're a tree, we know that that's all external. It's only because we're suffering through a winter. And the trees know, okay, it's winter time now, and I can't produce my fruit because it's winter. But it doesn't mean the tree hasn't died. The tree's still just as strong and just as powerful as it was, you know, a few months back. The tree's still there. Klal Yisrael as a whole, it's a message of hope. When you look at our Tu B'Shvat, the Simcha really is that you see the hope for Klal Yisrael. You see that Klal Yisrael is strong and is vibrant, and it's dafka at a time where there's nothing on the trees. We see this. You know, if the trees have blossoms and the trees have fruits, we don't have that inspiration anymore. Because we say, yeah, they have fruits, but I don't have any fruits. You know, they have leaves, I don't have any leaves. When you can see the tree, and you see the tree itself on the outside has nothing going on. Totally empty. But Tu B'Shvat tells us to look a little deeper. See, inside, there are things happening inside. There's sap rising up. The winter is a long, there's still a long winter ahead of us. The sap's rising up, and those fruits are getting ready to blossom. And that's a tremendous inspiration. That's an inspiration for Klal Yisrael as a whole, and for individuals. There's another quote here from Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch writes, the 15th of Shvat is the new year of the trees, the birthday of blossoms, even in the middle of the winter. Think of him and experience joy and exaltation with your God. When the season changes and thousands of buds and blossoms herald the arrival of spring, we celebrate the jubilation, not only God's festival of nature's reawakening, but also the divine festival of our own spring. But in the midst of the winter, Jewish wisdom points silently to the defoliated trees. We're being told, everyone go outside, look at the trees, you know, another week and a half from now. And we're going to see nothing there. But Jewish wisdom tells us, look at those trees. Behold, today they are celebrating the birthday of the coming spring. Under this torn, dark, cold bark, new fresh life pulsates. And that's Klal Yisrael. That fresh life is there. That fresh life is always pulsating beneath. We're just waiting for the spring to come so it can come out and blossom. That's what we're waiting for. And we have to be very, very clear. It's not just potential. It's really there in the trees. We're not waiting for there's potentially going to be spring. Spring's going to come. It's on the calendar. Spring will come. The sun will shine. It will get warm. And the trees will blossom. That's how nature works. And that's Klal Yisrael. It's not that, you know, we hope in some distant place we're going to... It's on the calendar. At some point, Hashem has it on his calendar. On Hashem's calendar, there's spring coming, and the spring of history is coming. And Klal Yisrael's sap, which is rising up right now, is ready to make those new fruits and new blossoms that we're waiting for. The Tehillim Perek Aleph. Put the Tehillim over here. Yeah, everyone knows Tehillim Perek Aleph, right? So there it is. Tehillim Perek Aleph. Let's read it from the text. Talks about the tzaddik. So the tzaddik is like the tree that's planted on the water, that it gives forth its fruit at the right time, and its leaves don't wither, and everything that it does is successful. But a rasha is not like that. The rasha is just like the chaff of the wheat. The wind just blows right away. And the big difference in this mashal is, you know, that the tree has firm, strong roots planted, and therefore nothing can, like it says in Avos also, nothing can knock over that tree. If you have firm, strong roots, then your tree is steady, and it's planted and remains. A rasha just gets blown away. A rasha, somebody has no roots, his roots are not planted firmly, so he gets blown away. A question?
It's another question. I just have to tell you, this is so irrelevant, but it's a study that was done of trees, and why in a hurricane some trees fall over and some trees don't.
Yeah.
They found out that same exact type of tree that falls over and the other one doesn't are the trees that are watered and taken care of, mm-hmm, and manicured, that because they don't have to struggle to get the water from the water table, their roots go this way instead of going down.
Interesting.
So that the trees that have to find the water, that don't get taken care of, that have to struggle for the water, actually survive the winds of the hurricane because their roots go down, mm-hmm, versus the ones that have it basically an easy life as a tree, and those are the ones that topple over.
Interesting.
So, like, I'm thinking of this study, they just...
Right, so going through the struggle makes you stronger sometimes.
Struggle.
Right, that's interesting.
But it's absolutely...
saves it in the wind flow.
Absolutely right.
What?
Absolutely right. I came from Russia. I can survive whatever I can. You know, yes. I assume that not every American will survive being in
this.
Right. If you find in any condition, but I'm okay.
Right. The more struggle you have, the stronger you come out at the end.
No, I'm right. Sure it is. It's absolutely true.
Right. That's a fascinating study. Very interesting.
I can compare.
Right. And we have to look at it as individuals as well. Now, this, in Avos, we're comparing, the Hillel, we're comparing the individual tzaddik to a tree. So we talked about it as Klai Yisrael in a larger picture. But in our lives also, you know, we have our times where we feel we're more fruitful, times we feel that we're blossoming, times that we feel that we're more productive and we're accomplishing more and doing more, we're in good spirits and good moods, our emotions are high, we're happy, we're excited. And then there's times in life where we don't feel that way. The times where we feel a little bit more, you know, less fruitful, less accomplished, a little down, a little depressed, unproductive, distant. We have those times as well. But being that we're trees, those times should not get us down. We'll have our down times, so do trees. But as long as we have our roots planted, and we have that sap rising through us at all times, so at that point we should feel, we know that as soon as we get past this period, we get past this season, we get past this weather that we're going through, so then we're able to blossom once again. That's the inspiration one finds from Tu B'Shvat. There is, so just to go back to that pasuk we reread before, it says, Kinei astav avar. Now eventually you get to the point where the winter is past, and the rain is all over, and then you see Nitzanim Yirgosh, the flowers start appearing. When the flowers start appearing, so then you know you've made it. That's when you made it through. That's the times of Mashiach, that's the salvation. This is Amir Yigiyah, that's time where it's time for singing. The Kol HaTorah Shana Be'Arceinu, and that's the time where you hear the birds in the land. That's times of Mashiach. But he says, but when frost and ice, storms and the chill of winter still prevail, you will stop, enjoy, and surprised to look upon one violet that has raised its little head through the blanket of snow. You will think of the struggle that this little flower endured and the strength which it developed amidst those winter tempests. And then you will happily clasp it to your heart, filled with the hope and certainty that Tu B'Shvat has finally come. You will remember that even in a leap year, Tu B'Shvat surely leads to Nisan, to Pesach, when the sun will shine, the springtime will smile, and we'll be able to see from the heavens and the earth that, like he says, the winter's passed, the rain is gone, and all the blossoms are blossoming. So that's in short, Rav Hirsch's beautiful words when it comes to Tu B'Shvat. Is there anything I want to read in here? Again, it's a much longer piece. But I think we get the point, and his point is, but we see that mashal is such a gorgeous mashal. And so Tu B'Shvat, we asked in the beginning, then what is the simcha of Tu B'Shvat? Why is it a day of simcha? So the halachas themselves are not always simcha, they're technical. You know, last year, this year, you know, it's your accounting record, that's what it is. But the idea that Tu B'Shvat is on that day because finally the trees are waking up, to us that's a tremendous lesson. And then we mentioned Sukkot is the time where nature starts to die. Right? Sukkot is when the fall begins and the leaves are falling off the trees. So in Sukkot, we can't look at the trees for inspiration because we see the trees are withering. What we do is we take the lulav and we say, well, even though the trees are dying, I'm going to stay alive. Right? I take my lulav, which we said, lulav equals life. Lulav is gematria chayim. I take my esrog and I try to get the energy out of that. And then from then on, I can't look at trees much because I look at the trees and I don't see anything. But Tu B'Shvat tells us, no. You know, right now, you look at the tree. The tree is going to blossom and I can draw my inspiration out of that. That's Tu B'Shvat. It's just sleeping, right? It's in hibernation right now. Right? It's dormant. Yeah, that's the word, dormant. That's the word. And Klai Yisrael has the times where they're dormant as well. So I like to take this to understand the entire month of Shvat. Because there's nothing that happens on the calendar remarkable in Shvat besides Tu B'Shvat. In our minds, though, you know, Shvat sort of is like we're kind of heading towards spring, you know, February, March, like, you know, we kind of feel it in the air. The March comes in like a lion, like a lamb, as they say. Like, you know, we're almost there, we're getting there. And in our minds, we have to figure that Shvat, despite the fact it associates with winter and darkness and cold and everything else, and Golus, but there's a transitional point in Shvat which tells us, no, Shvat is supposed to only be, the darkness of Shvat is temporary, because deep down, Shvat is able to lead us into this beautiful Yontif season. When Tu B'Shvat comes, in Halacha, there's a concept, 3 days before Yontif, you start discussing the Yontif. So on Tu B'Shvat, you'll start discussing Purim. Right? And Purim comes and starts discussing Pesach, because it's 30 days away. You don't start cleaning on Purim, you just start talking on Purim, right? But Tu B'Shvat comes, we're already discussing the salvation of Purim, and Purim Pesach connect, and that's it. The success is here, the beauty is here, the Yeshua has finally come. So after we've discussed, you know, the darkness of Kislev and how, you know, the Mar Cheshvan we didn't discuss yet in this class, but Mar Cheshvan is dark, and Kislev is dark, and Tevis is dark, and Tevis is even the worst we said, it's Esav, and it's Golus. Finally we get to say, Shvat has arrived, and we can get there. Mirza Hashem will discuss over the coming weeks, you know, that the Shevet of Shvat is Shevet Asher, and the Mazel, the constellation of Shvat, is the Dewey, it's the bucket, Aquarius. And when you picture the idea, Usher, we'll talk about more, how Usher was considered, we say, the word Usher itself relates to like Ashur, like Ashrei, like happy, fortunate, that there's something very fortunate about Usher. Usher was a very wealthy Shevet, they had lots of oil, right, there was a sort of success to Shevet Usher financially, and they were known to be a Shevet of beauty. And the idea of a bucket, we're talking about a bucket drawing out water, water also symbolizes hope and growth. As the water symbolizes. So that idea of the constellation being the bucket, the Dili, it shows us that, you know, Shvat's a time where Dili literally means to lift something up. You know, Dole in Hebrew is to lift something up. And the Dili, the bucket, is drawing out water from the well. And that water itself is life, it's growth. It's something which is supposed to lead to the sprouts, it's supposed to lead to. So Shvat has this very positive energy, which is there, of growth, of reawakening, of inspiration. Which you find occurring beneath the surface in nature, whereas in contrast, you find it at the surface when it comes to Nisan or Iyar. But right now you see beneath the surface, but it's there. So it's a message to us that lay our roots very, very firm, understand tough times, we will wake up, we do wake up. And I would even add in that, you know, on Purim, in the Megillah, so we say, on that night, the king awoke. And Chazal teach us that what it says about the king in the Megillah is really reference also to Hashem waking up. And Purim is a time where we actively wake up. You know, Purim, you know, the Klal Yisrael dances on Purim. You know, we're up and we're at it and we're excited. But where does that come from? You can't just, like, you know, jump out. It comes from the buildup. You know, the buildup begins, you know, as times of Shvat, we look at beneath the surface or something there which is being aroused. So with that buildup, I can lead myself to the dancing and excitement of Purim. I have to have that buildup. So our job this month is to find within ourselves those roots. Is to find within ourselves, you know, how when we're dormant, we have something still cooking within. And to know that, you know, we all have our times, we will blossom, we will produce fruits, both for ourselves and for Klal Yisrael.
The word Shvat means something, the name of the animal.
I mean, the word Shvat itself, I guess, would be like Shevet, like a staff, is where we come from. Like a stick, shave it's a stick, a staff. Yeah, I'm not sure what that would connect. Why that would connect? I'm not sure. Right. Interesting, right?
The song, you know, the age of Aquarius. You know,
oh. That's right. That's funny.